Hello and welcome to A Woman's Perspective, where the news unfolds through the lens of a woman's world. From breaking stories to insightful articles, we bring you a fresh perspective on today's events. I'm Virginia Voice volunteer Tracy Rothschild Lynch. Today's reading begins with The Secrets to Healthy Aging. It's in the Good Housekeeping edition, May-June 2025, and it's written by Merrill Davids Landau. How long you live isn't the only thing that matters. How well you live counts too. Experts are aiming their ample brain power at helping people stay sharp and active for as long as possible. Here are the steps you can take now. Are you hoping to stick around to a ripe old age, say your late 80s or beyond? If you're like many people, the answer might be no, maybe because you picture being sick or disabled, being a burden to your family, or having a poor quality of life. But what if you could reach a very old age and remain fit enough to manage a 5K, or hike steep trails, or at least live independently and keep pace with your great-grandkids? Scientists today are focused on something new, your health span. Rather than simply helping people celebrate many birthdays, they want to make those older years great ones, says Matt Kyberlein, PhD and CEO of Optispan, and a former director of the Healthing, Aging, and Longevity Research Institute at the University of Washington. A couple of definitions. Your lifespan is how many years you're alive. Your health span, though, is how many of those years you are alert, engaged, and active, said Stephen Kopecky, MD, a cardiologist with the Mayo Clinic and the author of Live Younger, Longer. With a longer health span, you may still get sick or develop a chronic condition at some point, but if you do, it won't put too big a crimp on your later years. What makes us feel elderly? Conditions we associate with aging typically start in our cells and tissues before they become visible, and health span scientists are trying to figure out what causes these to get so messed up as we get older. The list so far includes dysfunctions of mitochondria, the engines of the cells, shortening of telomeres, substances at the end of chromosomes that act like shoelace tips to keep them from fraying, and glitches in info transfer between parts of a cell. A bunch of factors affect cellular aging, including the environment we live in and our genes. But lifestyle is a big part of it, and it's become clear that we know that things we know are bad for us, such as high sugar intake that can increase the risk of type 2 diabetes, and the lack of exercise that can lead to heart disease and stroke, do their dirty work by causing cellular dysfunction. The upside? The same things known to help prevent conditions like diabetes, stroke, and heart attacks are effective at influencing the biology of aging and keeping cells healthy, says Kyberlein. The ideal results? We feel good, even as the years tick by. As experts learn more about how to expand health span, some advice may evolve. For now, these are the best tools to keep you at your healthiest, now and well into the future. Number one, address your stress. Being worried is human, but feeling chronologically stressed speeds up aging, says Alyssa Eppel, PhD, director of the Aging, Metabolism, and Emotions Center at University of California, San Francisco. Among its other effects, stress fuels low-grade inflammation that damages cells and affects the length of chromosome-protecting telomeres, she says. Four strategies to ease it are: take nature breaks. Even short ones are great for reducing angst, according to a research review. One study showed that there were benefits to spending just 20 to 30 minutes in nature a few times each week. Number two, time travel mentally. One quick stress reducer is time distancing, a way to develop perspective that Apple recommends and often uses. Think about your biggest worries and ask yourself how much they will matter in a week, a month, or a year, or even decades from now. Things we're sweating over today will almost always seem meaningless later, or at least not like the pivotal moments we currently imagine them to be. And this can be a real relief to remember. Schedule inner me time. Meditate. Write in a journal or go for a brisk run or walk to get a zen-like internal space. Suggest Anna Lala, MD, a cardiologist at Mount Sinai Hospital. This can inspire you to stay on track with other routines that help reduce your levels of stress. The days I take the time to meditate are the days I do the most healthy eating and exercise, Dr. Lala says. Designate a phone-free zone. Many of us are conditioned to check our smartphones dozens of times a day, but researchers have linked too much screen time to stress, anxiety, and poor sleep. Cutting back by, say, making Saturday morning a phone-free period in your home will lower your stress levels, especially when you use that time to move your body, as a study by German researchers showed. Health span strategy number two is watch your blood sugar. Having consistently high levels of blood glucose or levels that frequency swing between high and low damages many cells. That sets the stage for diseases like diabetes and heart disease that can shorten health span. Try these ideas. Eat a Mediterranean diet. This style of eating, full of vegetables, fruits, high quality fats, such as foods from foods like olive oil and nuts, and protein, particularly from fish, is not only ideal for overall health, but also a great way to keep blood sugar in check, Dr. Kopecky says. Start by adding some of these foods to each meal. Go green with your tea. Japanese researchers found that drinking green tea regularly lowered blood glucose levels in people without diabetes. One reason? It reduces the amount of unhealthy bacteria in the gut. Track your sugar. If you're at risk for heart disease and pre-diabetes, meaning elevated blood sugar levels that don't quite cross the diabetes threshold, you may benefit from extra monitoring to learn how your blood sugar changes based on what you eat. If your doctor has found that your A1C is above 5.7, despite eating and exercises in what you believe is an optimal way, Dr. Lala suggests asking the doc whether temporarily wearing a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor, and checking it after eating different foods could help you make better choices. Healthy span tip number three, move your body. Regular exercise, of course, keeps our muscles strong to help us stay active as we get older, but it can also fight inflammation throughout the body and keep insulin levels from going high enough to be cell damaging. Four ways to get that boost are: do something extra. We all need formal cardio, say walking, running, swimming, or playing pickleball. Ideally, shoot for at least 150 minutes each week. Doing it in spurts is fine. But it's wise to move all day long, Dr. Kopecky says. Walk around your office every a half hour. Sweep your kitchen before plopping down in front of the TV, and take the stairs whenever possible. Add strength training to the mix. Some form of resistance training is crucial, Kyberline says. That could be lifting weights, using resistance bands, or doing bodyweight exercises. The loss of lean muscle mass is one of the biggest predictors of frailty in the elderly, he adds. Up your protein intake. Muscles grow when you feed them protein, but for optimal strength as you age, you may need more than the daily recommendations. Kyberline suggests 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight, which means that if a 150-pound woman would take in 102 grams of protein daily. A smart tip: includes some protein in every meal from foods like nuts, eggs, soy protein, lentils, beans, fish, and lean meat. Work on your balance. Yoga is a great way to do this. There are lots of free videos online if you can't get to a studio, especially on sites like YouTube. It improves muscle tone and balance, says Dr. Lala, which helps prevent falls and lets you move with ease. And health span tip number 4, protect your heart. Yes, heart disease is the top killer of women. But even when it's not fatal, it can leave people unable to lead active, thriving lives. The same is true for stroke. To keep your cardiovascular system in tip-top shape, prioritize exercise and try these tips. Rediscover your kitchen. It may seem easier to order takeout, but when you cook, you get to control portion sizes, use healthy ingredients, and limit added sugars and saturated fats. Make cooking fun by trying easy new recipes and amp them up with spices and flavor boosters like citrus, interesting vinegars, herbs, and ginger. Experiment with fermented foods. Fermented soy products like miso and natto can significantly lower the risk of high blood pressure when eaten regularly, Japanese researchers have found. And drinking the fermented dairy product kefir each day, try it in a smoothie, may lower heart disease risk. Call your friends. People who feel lonely have a higher risk of heart disease, stroke, and depression. Sign up for a group dance class and connect with others there, or start a book club with friends. Just picking up the phone and chatting with someone for 10 minutes a few times a week significantly reduces loneliness, research has found. And lastly, get enough sleep. It's one of the most important things you can do to improve your lifespan, Dr. Kopecky says. While you snooze, your body repairs crucial tissue, including in your heart. Aim to keep to the same sleep schedule every day and create a bedtime routine. Put aside your phone an hour before sleep and do something soothing. Maybe take a bath, read, meditate, or write down the things you're grateful for, or all of the above. Again, this article is entitled The Secrets to Healthy Aging. It was in the May-June 2025 edition of Good Housekeeping, and it's written by Merrill Davids Landau. Our next article is in the Washington Post on December 13, 2024. It's written by Lindsay Bever. The article is entitled From Heart Disease to IUDs: How Doctors Dismiss Women's Pain. Several studies support the claim that gender bias in health in medicine routinely leads to a denial of pain relief for female patients for a range of health conditions. One woman was told she was being dramatic when she pleaded for a brain scan after suffering months of headaches and pounding in her ears. It turned out she had a brain tumor. Another was ignored as she cried out in pain during a 33-hour labor. She was supposed to be getting pain medication through her epidural, but it had fallen out. Dozens of women complained of tortuous pain as their vaginal walls were punctured during an egg retrieval process. They were told their pain was normal, but in actuality, they were getting saline instead of anesthesia. These are just some of the stories of women who say their pain and suffering has been dismissed or misdiagnosed by doctors. Although these are anecdotal reports, a number of studies support the claim that women in pain often are not taken as seriously as men. This year, the Journal of the American Heart Association reported that women who visited emergency departments with chest pains waited 29% longer than men to be evaluated for possible heart attacks. An analysis of 981 emergency room visits showed that women with acute abdominal pain were up to 25% less likely than their male counterparts to be treated with powerful opioid painkillers. Another study showed that middle-aged women with chest pain and other symptoms of heart disease were twice as likely to be diagnosed with a mental illness compared with men who had the same symptoms. Eileen Ruhoy, a 53-year-old neurologist from Seattle who had head pain and pounding in her ears, said, "I was told I knew too much, that I was working too hard, and that I was stressed out, and that I was anxious." Despite having a medical degree, Ru Hoy said she struggled to get doctors to order a brain scan. By the time she got it, in 2015, a tennis ball-sized tumor was pushing her brain to one side. She needed surgery, but first, she rushed home, hugged her 11-year-old daughter, and wrote her a letter to tell her goodbye. Ru Hoy did not die on the operating table, but her tumor had grown so large it could not entirely be removed. Now, she has several smaller tumors that require radiation treatment. She said many of her female patients have had experiences similar to hers. They're not validated with regards to their concern. They're gaslit. They're not understood, she said. They feel like no one is listening to them. Doubts about women's pain can affect treatment for a wide range of health issues, including heart problems, stroke, reproductive health, chronic illness, adolescent pain, and physical pain, among other things, study showed. Research also suggests that women are more sensitive to pain than men, and are more likely to express it, so their pain is often seen as an overreaction rather than a reality, said Roger Fillingham, director of the Pain Research and Intervention Center of Excellence at the University of Florida. Fillingham, who co-wrote a review article on sex differences in pain, said there are many possible explanations, including hormones, genetics, and even social factors such as gender roles. Regardless, he said, you treat the pain that the patient has, not the pain that you think the patient should have. Women say reproductive health complaints are commonly ignored. They often cite pain bias around areas of reproductive health, including endometriosis, labor pain, and insertion of an intrauterine device, or IUD. When Molly Hill made an appointment at a Connecticut clinic in 2017 to get an IUD, she said she was warned it would be uncomfortable, but she was not prepared for horrific pain. Hill, now 27 and living in San Francisco, recalled that during the procedure she began crying in pain and shouted at the doctor to stop. "We're almost done," she said the doctor told her, and continued the procedure. "It was a full-body, electrifying, knife-stabbing pain," she said. After it was done, she said she lay sobbing on the table in physical and emotional pain. "It felt violating, too, to have that pain deep in your core where you feel the most vulnerable." Studies consistently show that women who have not experienced vaginal birth have much higher pain during IUD insertion compared with women who have given birth. A Swedish study found that among 224 women who have not given birth, 89% reported moderate or severe pain. 1 in 6 of the women said the pain was severe. Although numbing agents and local anesthetics are available, they are rarely used. In some cases, women have sued physicians for ignoring their pain. Dozens of women sued Yale University, claiming that during an egg harvesting procedure at an infertility clinic, they were supposed to be receiving the powerful painkiller fentanyl. But some women were getting only diluted pain medication or none at all, according to lawsuits filed in the state superior court in Connecticut. Later, the clinic discovered a nurse had been stealing vials of fentanyl and replacing the painkiller with saline solution. The nurse pleaded guilty last year and was sentenced for tampering with the drugs. One of the plaintiffs, Laura Czar, wrote about her experience for Elle magazine, describing it as, quote, a horrible gut-wrenching pain, and told a doctor at the time, "I can feel everything you're doing." Despite her protest, the doctor continued. Yale said in a statement that it deeply regrets the women's distress, and it has reviewed its procedures and made changes to further oversight of pain control and control substances. Racial disparities in pain management. For Cherie Turpin, the pain of sickle cell disease sometimes feels like tiny knives slicing her open. Sickle cell disease is an inherited blood disorder that can cause suffering so severe its attacks are called pain crises. But when Turpin, who is Black, experiences a pain crisis, the 34-year-old does not rush to the ER in Rochester, New York. Instead, she combs her hair, mists some perfume, and slips on her Sunday best in hopes that the doctors and nurses won't peg her as a drug seeker, she said. Sometimes Turpin gets a care team that understands her pain. Other times, she's treated as a bother. I've even been told shut up by a nurse because I was screaming too loud when I was in pain, she said. Abundant research shows racial bias in pain treatment. A 2016 study found half of white medical students and residents held at least one false belief about biological differences between Blacks and whites, and were more likely to underestimate Black patients' pain. The management of pain is one of the largest disparities that we see between Black people and white people in the American healthcare system, said Tina Sachs, an associate professor at the University of California, Berkeley, and an author of Invisible Visits, Black Middle-Class Women in the American Healthcare System. Labeling women hysterical or blaming psychological causes. Research shows men in chronic pain tend to be regarded as stoic, while women are more likely to be considered emotional and hysterical, and accused of, quote, fabricating the pain. Carol Clay, a 68-year-old from Tampa, had endured years of chronic pain from arthritis, degenerative disc disease, and spinal stenosis. During a hospital stay last year, her doctor noted in her medical record that she was crying hysterically. Clay said she was crying because she was unable to sit, stand, or walk without agony, and the doctor had removed morphine from her cocktail of pain medications. She wonders whether the doctors would have called me hysterical if I was a man, she said. Tampa General Hospital said it could not discuss specific patients, but stated, patient treatment plans, including medication orders to reduce pain, are prescribed by multidisciplinary clinical teams. Research shows women's physical pain is often attributed to psychological causes. Jen Medeiros, a 72-year-old Air Force veteran from Chipley, Florida, said the trauma of having pain dismissed by doctors has stayed with her for years. She saw about a dozen doctors in the early 1970s for pelvic pain. When clinicians could not identify the cause of her pain, she was referred to a psychiatrist. She said, you start to doubt yourself after so many medical experts tell you there's nothing wrong with you. After a hysterectomy in 1976, Medeiros learned that fibroid tumors in her uterus had been the source of her pain. She said learning her pain was real and physical made all the difference in the world. Why women's pain complaints often aren't taken seriously. During a 33-hour labor with her first child in 2011, Anousheh Hussain, 42, of D.C., opted for epidural pain relief, but said she still felt it all, every contraction, every cramp, and every dismissal of her pain by her medical team. The doctor reassured her that she was getting the maximum dosage of pain medication. In fact, she wasn't getting any at all. She said her epidural had slipped out. By the time the arrow was caught, she was shaking uncontrollably and in need of an emergency cesarean section, she said. There's a pain gap, but there's also a credibility gap, said Hussain, author of The Pain Gap, How Sexism and Racism in Healthcare Kill Women. Women are not believed about their bodies, period. This pain gap may stem in part from the fact that women have been historically excluded from medical research. It wasn't until 2016 that the National Institutes of Health required sex to be considered as a biological variable in most studies it funded. We're making progress, said David Thomas, special advisor to the director of NIH's Office of Research on Women's Health. But we do have a long way to go, because there's this whole institutional approach in doing research, pain and beyond, where it tends to be male-focused. Nearly 95% of U.S. medical school students said instruction on sex and gender differences in medicine should be included in curriculums, according to a 2015 survey. But only 43% said their curriculum had helped them understand those differences, and only 34.5% said they felt prepared to manage them in a healthcare setting. It is changing, but it's changing very slowly, said Janice Werbinski, immediate past president of the American Medical Women's Association and chair of the mentorship committee of the association's Sex and Gender Health Collaborative. How women can advocate for better pain care. It took decades to solve the mystery of Maureen Woods' chronic pain. Woods, 64, of Myersville, Maryland, started having joint pain in her teens, and over the years, she told dozens of doctors her pain was debilitating, she said. Some told her it was all in her head. In 2017, she was diagnosed with hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, a connective tissue disorder often causing loose joints, dislocations, and chronic pain. She said women who are not being heard should keep advocating for themselves. You have to go with your gut. Something is wrong, and I need to find a doctor who can figure it out, she said. Marjorie Jenkins, dean of the University of South Carolina School of Medicine, Greenville, urged women against feeling pressured to accept an everything is normal non-diagnosis. If your provider does not appear to be listening to you or believing what you're saying, then you need a new provider, Jenkins said. You are the client, you are the customer, and you are the owner of your health. Women can also take a family member, friend, or other support person who can corroborate their stories, said Allison McGregor, an emergency medicine professor at the University of South Carolina School of Medicine, Greenville, and author of the book, Sex Matters, How Male-Centric Medicine Endangers Women's Health and What We Can Do About It. Particularly in emergency departments, she said, there can be an inherent bias. There's this assumption that women are emotional and anxious, and that is the main issue, she said. Again, this article from the Washington Post was entitled From Heart Disease to IUDs, How Doctors... I've missed the title here. How Doctors Dismiss Women's Pain. So sorry about that. And that was in the Washington Post and written by Lindsay Bever. Finally, we have a poem. This poem is a very short poem by Rupi Kaur, and it's entitled, What's the Greatest Lesson a Woman Should Learn? What's the greatest lesson a woman should learn? That since day one, she's already had everything she needs within herself. It's the world that convinced her she did not. Again, this short poem was entitled, What's the Greatest Lesson a Woman Should Learn? By Rupi Kaur. And that's all the time we have for A Woman's Perspective for today. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Tracy Rothschild Lynch for The Virginia Voice. This program is on the air every Saturday at 4 p.m. and again every Monday at 7 a.m. You can also listen to this program anytime on demand at www.virginiavoice.org. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.